Welcome back. You're listening to EAA Radio. I'm sitting here with Chuck Maddock. Is that your...
Chuck Adams.
Adams. And this is Push to Talk, the ATC half hour today. I know you've had some of the lighter stories.
One of the funnier or the lighter sides of the... I spent 6 years here working in this, in the old tower. I didn't get the opportunity to work in the new tower. Actually, I didn't bid because of the different things that are going on with the contractual disputes, but we were working the runway 27 and it was busy. We had 75-80 airplanes inside Fisk, and we're talking, I was nonstop, my mouth was just a big cotton ball, and the radio maintenance guys come popping up through the steps and goes, yeah, your radios are back. They'd been out for like 15 minutes and we didn't know about it.
So just talking just went, to yourself, basically.
Just talking to ourselves, so yeah.
What are some of the differences about the departure and arrival procedures here at Oshkosh from your regular everyday controlled and uncontrolled airports, for that matter?
Well, the uncontrolled airports, I mean, the AIM dictates how the uncontrolled airports operate, how the aircraft comes into the pattern, how the aircraft depart the pattern. And it keeps you safe. You make radio calls, you find out where the planes are in the pattern, then you depart. Here it's a little bit different, where the arrivals are on the tower frequency and the departures are actually talking to what we label in the FAA, and everything has an acronym, MUCOWS, or the Mobile Operations Communications Workstations. Man, MUCOWS.
The eye crossing doesn't come across on the radio there.
So the departure folks... it's actually a look and go type scenario where they look down the runway to make sure the runway is clear and then let the departure go with the visual spacing on final. Make sure that you follow the departure procedures. If you don't have a NOTAM booklet, go get one. Find one before you depart so you know where you're supposed to go. I can't tell you the number of times I've been sitting out at Fisk and had a solid string of arrivals coming back up into Oshkosh. And here comes a guy flying opposite direction at 1,800 feet right back down the tracks. And that just, you're asking for an accident.
Recipe
that kind
for
of stuff.
Disaster.
Yeah, absolutely. Altitude is your friend when you get out of here. If you have an airplane that is capable of flying at 85, 95, get up there. It's cooler, number one. And number two, you're high enough that above all the other guys that are trying to make it into the air show.
What about your facility?
My facility, we do have touchscreen. It's called the ETVS, which is a communication system, and I can't remember who built it. It really doesn't matter. It is nice, but when they put it in, they still didn't separate our frequencies, so we still have a tremendous problem with frequency bleed over. So, and we work split towers, so we have parallel runways. Mm. So, and as busy as a facility is, when both frequencies are going on the outside, both tower controllers are communicating, and then somebody calls the ground controller, or any one of the three has somebody call and somebody else talk, the ground controller can't hear who's calling because of the bleed over from the other two. So it's a rather frustrating problem, and it's because all the antennas are located up on top of the tower. There was a project that was funded to put in a remote transmitter site for us, and that's been pushed back and pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. And that's the problem with the, you mentioned FAA modernization, and that's this big buzz. You know, we'll put the focus on safety, the FAA chief says. Well, they've completely cut us out of all the projects. It used to be we had collaborative effort where we would go in and test the equipment before it went out into the field, and they had the controllers... opinions, a controller's view
feedback,
going, this isn't going to work because X, Y, and Z.
You're not the first one to express this issue.
You know, and it is so frustrating from our side because you're taking, well, here's your new equipment, go have fun with it. It doesn't work.
I've also understood that, this is something earlier in the week, one of our guests from the NATCO organization mentioned that not only are they not getting feedback before deploying it as, this is the new equipment, but they bid to the lowest bidder that will meet the minimum requirements, and this component may not be compatible with this component in terms of compatibility. So there's actually equipment problems, not just operator feedback, but...
That is, and that's very... And, it's not just us. We've got a controller here from Frankfurt, Germany.
Right.
And I never thought about this before because we're such a large entity. And it was just been within the last decade or so where the United States and the Canadian air traffic control systems were actually able to communicate back and forth between each other. We used to work with, I was a controller in Detroit Tracon, and we would have to manually call and tell the Windsor guys what their departures were, where the destination was, what the requested altitude was, what the transponder codes were, all the different pieces of information, because they didn't have it, because the two systems didn't talk to each other. Mm. Well, the German system is the same way, and I didn't think about all the countries, Italy, France,
right.
Poland, Czechoslovakia, all the ones that surround Germany.
In a much smaller geographic area.
It's like the state of, I suppose now it'd be Montana, since they've unified,
but the state
of Montana. And then you have all the states that surround that, inclusive of Canada, that their control systems don't talk to the other. They're changing transponder codes, and it's a lot of work inside the cockpit as you're flying along at 450, 500 miles an hour, and then to have to switch all this information back and forth, plus get the frequency and everything else. So, I mean, as controllers, we're learned to chunk information. I can't imagine. That's got to be a nightmare for those folks.
At least here, we're all dealing with the same language, more or less.
Well, there are two. I mean, English is a universal air traffic language, but that doesn't mean that everybody speaks it proficiently,
or that they adhere to that. I know that some of the countries. I think we had this controller in here was talking to us on Tuesday, I believe it was, or Monday.
Lutz.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he mentioned that there are actually. In some countries, he said in France, there are parts of it that says if you are not proficient in France, you don't come in, you don't come into this area. So I'm aware of the internationalization of English for it, but from what I understand, there's a lot of, especially with the local flights within these countries, where they don't necessarily adhere to that or...
I believe that.
And even so, the chatter going on between pilots and aircraft in the local communities,
right.
Your situational awareness as a unit, as an aviation community, airborne aviation community, really declines if everybody doesn't, get to overhear and have sort of an idea of what's going on.
Yeah, I can guess I could understand that, but I mean, that's almost a, and I don't mean to, but it's almost an arrogant American view.
Oh yeah,
to a point. I mean, if they fly into this country, they absolutely, I think, need to speak the language and be able to communicate with the controllers over here. But if I go to Germany, I don't have an expectation of everybody being able to speak English,
right?
Or France, or Italy, or someplace like that. So I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know. That's a tough one.
It's a tough one. I mean, how do you solve that? Because you've got the pilot flying from, Brazil to Japan.
Right.
To do those international flights, you're not going to become proficient in every single language that you're possibly going to encounter.
Absolutely.
As you fly through. So something has to be a central common...
Well, and that was the idea behind it. And it was kind of a uniform worldwide type thing where they said, well, we can do the English thing and be uniform.
Right.
And I know at the university, North Dakota is really instrumental in reaching out and getting contracts from other countries. And Air China, Taiwan Air, Japan Airlines, and now we have Saudi Arabians coming in to do helicopter training at the airport as well.
Wow.
They're buying another 75 or 80 airplanes.
Pretty
or
diverse.
Whatever. It's a very diverse community. And I know there are Nigerians and stuff that come in and fly the copter stuff there, too. So the language barrier gets to be rather interesting sometimes from the controller standpoint, because they're supposed to be proficient when they fly at the airport. But the inability to pronounce certain consonants and to be able to have certain vowel sounds,
right.
With the consonants, and because our tongues work that way because we're used to it, but
right.
there's not, they don't,
it's just not formulated that way.
No.
Well, we go and try and speak Japanese and everything else, and I'm sure they'd have exactly the,
well, and that was one of the comments we make, because we get to go out and talk to the students, and that was one of the things that I've said to them, that your English is much better than my Mandarin, so
yeah,
we're good.
There you
we're
go.
Good.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to go ahead and give out the number if anybody wants to call in and has any questions here in our last 15 minutes. That number is 920-230-7984, and we'll be happy to take your call and read it on the air when we come back. This is Magneto Mel. You are listening to Push to Talk on EAA Radio, 1210 AM, 100.7 FM, and airventure.org/radio.